Welcome back to the Paddle and Fin Podcast Network. We're brought to you by Pelican Built Tough. For all situations, go to pelican.com. Yak Gadget. For all your fine kayak fishing accessory needs, go to yakgadget.com. Eastport Marina on the beautiful shores of Dale Hollow Lake. For all your lodging, kayaking, and fishing needs, go to eastport.info. Now let's get this show started.
Welcome back to another episode of Bass Fishing for Noobs here on the Paddle and Fin Podcast. I am your host, John Lavery. Hopefully you guys still remember me. It has been a hot minute since I've actually had a chance to sit down and record, get something out for you guys, and I totally apologize for that. I took a few weeks off, a week off for my family vacation, and just last week I went up to the camp that I cancel out during the summer. So that was a lot of fun too. And now I'm back. I just wanted to give a quick thanks to Brian and Jimmy for filling in for me one of those weeks and recording a show. Hopefully you guys were able to tune in for that. Speaking of Brian and Jimmy, they are, as we record, kind of living up the high life down at iCast along with Armando. And so I hope those guys are doing great. By the time this airs, they will be probably on their way back and have a lot of cool stuff to share with you guys. So I can't wait to hear what they come back with. So, but without further ado, I wanted to introduce my guest for tonight. Any faithful Paddle and Fin listeners should recognize him as the host of the Feather and Fur segment of Paddle and Fin. But welcome, Brad Hurlboss.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
No problem, man. I appreciate you coming on.
It's different being on this side, you know, just get to sit back and talk and not have any of the stress of like finding a guest or like hitting record, you know, those things.
Yep. No, I'm glad I can take that off your back for a little bit, but I appreciate you making it easy for me to find a guest as well, because I was, you know, working to find one. And when I came back from camp, I unfortunately tested positive for COVID, so I'm kind of stuck in my house for the next 5 to 7 days, I guess. So getting a little cabin fever, but I'm feeling not horrible. You know, I'm working my way through it, just trying to keep the rest of my family healthy. But it's definitely nice to, you know, talk to somebody and especially about fishing, because I fished a little bit in North Carolina. We fished from the beach a bit and caught my first bluefish. A couple of other nice fish there. And then I fished up at camp, caught some nice bass up there. It's always nice fishing up there because it's a kind of a lake that most people don't fish. It's very low pressure. So fishing is usually pretty easy. It wasn't quite as good this year as it was in previous years, but we still caught fish. I usually take, I think this year I took 14 rods with me. So I can just take all the kids fishing. Yeah. As many as I could fit in my truck. And I didn't bring my best rods because I'm always worried. I'm hard enough on my rods, and I'm always worried about, you know, those rods getting broken. But I took 14 of my less nicer rods, and the kids definitely had a blast. So I was super psyched to see that.
So you can see behind me, I've got about a dozen of my good bass rods. What you can't see is over there, I have about 30 more rods. And a bunch of those are cheaper combos I bought. So when I was doing like guide stuff with Heroes on the Water and then being the South Central Project program coordinator for Wisconsin Hero Outdoors, I still take veterans out kayak fishing. So I have some less expensive combos for that because a lot of them have never kayaked before or fished before, or one or the other. Maybe they've kayaked, not fish, not kayak. So it's always nice to give them rods that are good, like good, but if it goes in the water, I'm not going to cry.
Right. No, I completely understand that. And speaking of that, I should remember that for next year, that I could probably borrow some of the rods from our local Heroes on the Water chapter, because we have, you know, a whole bunch that we take there. And as long as they're not having an event, I'm sure they probably wouldn't mind if I took them up to camp with me. It was, I have to admit, it was a little frustrating because I spent way more time, you know, untangling stuff and than I did fishing. But it, like I said, it's still worth it to see those kids catch fish. My 11-year-old caught a nice bass, like a probably like a 18-inch bass. So she was super excited. I was super happy for her. Yeah. So, I wanted to, you know, have you on because you've actually been doing pretty good. I know your segment is more about hunting, but you definitely are doing pretty well. And I super hope I don't jinx you by having you on tonight. But you're crushing it fishing this year too. So tell us a little bit about how that's going for you.
I've been having a really good season out of the kayak. So I've been fishing a local weeknight tournament, which has 8 to 10 regular opponents. A handful of them are really good sticks. A couple of them have done really well in like the BOS series and Bass series. They're local to here, but they travel nationwide. And I've really been able to dial in my local lakes this year, and I've had a really good season. So currently I am first place for Angler of the Year, and I figured it out last night, is depending on how the shuffle between second and third worked, I think second stayed put, almost positive. I should be 32 points in the lead with 4 events left, with first place bringing 20 points. So I have a pretty comfortable lead right now. Like, okay. I don't want to like knock on wood, but like I have a pretty good lead right now. This year was my first win ever out of a kayak, which that happened a couple month ago about. Like, I remember called Brian Schiller on the way home, and I was just like, dude, I don't know who's to call. I got that win. Like, I was crazy excited. Like, at the ramp, I was kind of like, just like, oh, this is awesome. Good fishing, everyone. And then I got in my truck, and I was like screaming like a kid. Like, I'm like, I just did it. Like, and I was fishing, and that was a big, I think we had 11 people or 12 people. And like I said, there's a lot of good sticks set. I mean, it's a small little tournament, but there's a lot of good sticks in there that just kind of keep their skills honed as they travel. So it's fun because I'm always like trying to better myself, obviously. And then this past two nights, and then yesterday, I had back-to-back wins both with big bass.
Awesome.
So that's 3 wins this season, a second, 3/3, and 1/4.
Nice. So a couple, another win or two, and you're going to definitely have it in the bag because there ain't too many people are going to catch you.
I didn't think I was going to win last night. I really didn't. It was a gamble and a grind. I went back to a spot I had caught good fish at before, which put me in second place. No, I take that back. My first win was on this lake out of the same spot. So last night was crazy windy, 15, 20, gusting 30, and our launch put us directly in, like, at the corner of the lake into the wind. So it was solid white caps, and pretty much most of the anglers went upriver. I did as well. I did a little fishing inside a tiny marina, super shallow, really choked out with weeds, didn't get a bump. I'm like, all right, I'll keep working my way up river, find more current. I got to the first bridge, thought I would clear, and all my rods got hung up. So I stopped, put all my rods down, got back out from under the bridge, and I was frustrated. And I'm like, I'm going where I want to go. And it took me probably 30 minutes of like battling those waves and chewing through weeds to get back to where I wanted to go. So it's 6:30 now. Fishing's 5:30 to 9. And I start fishing this like I did before, and it's like the holes are super weed choked now. The wind's blown in a lot of floating debris, a lot of duckweed sitting on top. I got ducks all around me. I've got raccoons hanging out on the shore. Like, it's a wildlife, and I can't find fish. And I go the first hour of throwing, like, we'll talk more about like the jigging worm because I've been doing great on that. Like, I threw the jigging worm, I threw a jig with a craw, a frog, a wacky, and not a single bite.
I would think wacky would be tough in that kind of wind, just detecting anything. I know when I throw a wacky and it's windy like that, you know, I really am fighting that big bow in my line. And, you know, that's why I would think something heavier like a jig might be, a better bet. But
so that little creek I went into has a peninsula that comes out, and I was actually really blocked from the wind.
Oh, okay.
So I was actually, it was a little tucked in corner. There's enough wind coming in to sweep, like to get a little bit of flow in there, plus the current from this creek. But for the most part, I was relatively wind protected compared to the main lake. I was very wind protected compared to the main lake. So I could fish a wacky. It wasn't great on top of the weeds. Like, it didn't work well because I think there was enough chop in there to like really not let it sink how I wanted to. Yep. And if I really didn't keep enough tension on it to let it sink, it got hung up in the weeds. It just wasn't a great choice. But really what I found out, what really worked was picking apart a single blowdown with some current and some wind and I was throwing a 10-inch worm on a 3/8 ounce Texas rig, not pegged, which that gave it just not pegged. So when it would, and they would hit it on the drop. So that weight was going in there, starting to pull it down, and that worm was just floating, but starting to drop. And that little bit of weight allowed it to pull fast enough down, like underneath that chop and that little slop on top, that they were hitting it before it got in the weeds.
Gotcha. Interesting.
And there was enough wind there to like make it frustrating, like for casting accuracy. Mm-hmm. And your cast had to be super specific, because if you were 3 feet off of, like, I caught two fish out of the same like 1 foot circle.
Wow.
Like right on, like right next to the same blowdown. If you cast, like I had casted 3 to 5 feet away from there, and they never touched it. And then I caught my third fish with 5 minutes left, 5 feet, same blowdown from those other two.
And you've taken big bass too quite a few times. So was that last, or which one was your big bass last night?
So big bass was my first fish at 18 inches that I pulled out of that blowdown last week. Is it 18 and a half? Last week was a big chunky one. Now I got to remember. Now I don't remember. Now I got to look back at my phone. I'm the guy on his phone on a podcast. Look at me go.
Hey, that's all right. That's all right.
I might have already deleted those pictures.
I was wondering about that because I know
18. It was 18 again, but it was super chunky. Just a fast. Nice. It was all. I didn't bring the scale out. 4.8 ish. It wasn't quite five, but it was high fours for sure. That's a cool lake, like what you were fishing, super unpressured and just has big, big fish.
Gotcha. Nice. And how many different places do you fish in this tournament? Does it kind of rotate around, or?
It does. So it's mainly focused on the Madison chain. So we have Mendota, Monona, Wabisa, and Kiganza. And then we've had four other events also in Dane County to mix it up a little more. So I don't want to name all of those because some of those are some, like, if you want to do the research, you can figure it out. But absolutely. Some of those I don't want to name.
Yep. Nope. I don't blame you.
But the Madison chain sees, like, that's one thing that's been a huge confidence boost for me. The Madison chain sees a ton of pressure. 2 years ago I fished, so I've been kayak fishing since 2013 ish. I think I started in a canoe, then moved to a kayak. But in 2020 I bought a bass boat and I went really hard into the bass boat tournaments. And there's a weeknight league on the Madison chain here for bass boats. I did okay. I think I finished 12th that year for Angler of the Year, and that was my first year ever doing bass boats. So I was pretty happy with that.
Yeah, I'd say that's okay.
I finished that good because I was consistent and just fished every single weeknight. Like, I never won the money. I never had big bass. That was your single biggest fish by measurement is how they did it. Gotcha. But I really learned a lot. But the Madison chain, going back to that, you have a Tuesday night boat league that rotates. You have the Tuesday night kayak league that rotates. There's a Wednesday boat lead. And when I was there, it was normally 20 to 30 boats every single night. Sometimes a lot of boats had two people. I mean, I saw over 50 people on that for a Wednesday night tournament.
Wow.
And then you have a lot of Saturday and Sunday tournaments. If you look at the DNR schedule, there's almost a boat tournament out here. A big boat tournament anywhere between like 50 and 200 boats every single weekend.
Wow. That is pretty heavy pressure.
So to consistently catch fish on this lake, like I keep wanting to say like, I'm just getting super lucky, but like, I think I've like, at this point, I almost feel like I've kind of got it somewhat figured out, like to be more consistent like this. Like, I have some lakes that I don't do good on. I mean, there's just some that sometimes I'm hit or miss. Like, I either haven't figured out or I don't on the chain. That really rolls around time of year, to be honest. Like, some lakes I'm really good on in spring, and I just haven't figured out that mid-hot summer bite.
Right.
Other lakes, I can't figure it out in spring, but I understand the mid-hot summer bite out there. And you would think it'd be the same because they're all connected, but each lake fish is completely different.
Interesting. Do you have some that are more grassy than others? I know we have, that's one nice thing about where I live is I have one lake close by me that what I call my home lake that really doesn't have any grass at all. It's a reservoir, but then I have one to the north of me that gets really grassy. And so I kind of get to learn how to fish both ways. I actually almost prefer the non-grassy one. I don't think I do as well in the thick grass, but that's something I definitely started working on, and I feel like I'm getting more comfortable with that. So
all four lakes have everything you could want, from deep water to grass to rock to brush to cribs. It's just figuring out at what time of year what is where is really what right. it is. But right. all four lakes have a really good variety of everything. So you can really, I mean, if you're a deep water fisherman, you can find your deep water spots on any of these lakes. If you're a shallow water guy, you can work your shallow water magic and have a chance. It's really trying to locate and find what's holding the big fish at that time.
Okay. Interesting.
All of these lakes have largemouth and smallmouth.
Okay. That's one thing that, by me, there's not many smallmouth in the lakes that I fish. I have in my home lake, like I said, I have caught one pretty nice smallmouth there, and a buddy of mine, I saw catch one. I have pictures of him, but it's definitely not a common occurrence there. They're in there, but, not many. So, but yet then on the river, it's almost the exact opposite. I've caught a million smallmouth on the river. Only a few largemouth. It's definitely kind of flip-flop, but it would be cool to fish someplace that has a lot of both. I think that would be pretty neat.
It's fun because you're able to like work on different techniques, and there's a lot of, and we can just roll into that too. I mean, so there's three techniques this year that I've started using, which I never had confidence in, and we can focus on the jig and worm definitely, but I can tell you the story on how I stumbled into that even. But like drop shot, I gained a ton of confidence in. That's how I got my win last week. It was a drop shot around sunken timber.
Interesting. That's another technique that I have zero confidence in. I have tried it a ton and have had zero success. So not 100% sure what I'm doing wrong, but it's not for lack of trying. So
I feel like all it takes is one good bite though, and you'll have that confidence, and then your opinion will change. Like,
no, and last I almost wish I would have thrown that this weekend or at last week at camp just to play around with it, because I brought jigs with me last week because I'm like, I want to catch a jig fish. I don't catch a lot of jig fish, and I'm like, I'm going to bring a jig some jigs up there, and if I'm going to catch them, it's going to be there. But then the bottom was so mucky that the jig really didn't work great because it was just constantly down in that muck. So a drop shot probably would have been good in that situation. So
probably. So that's last year. I didn't throw that at all. I started this spring trying it for a spring bike, and I hooked up on my first trip ever using it, and that gave me some really big confidence. And then now it's always if I don't have a specific idea of what I'm going to do, it's one of my rods that are tied up knowing I'm going to try it. Like, that's how much confidence I've gained in it just in this season alone. And that's what my win came on last week. I tried dragging a worm, same Texas rig with a 10-inch worm. I tried a jigging worm. I tried a jigging craw. I threw a wacky. I threw a couple different kinds of top water. And every fish I caught came on that same on that drop shot. I tried different colors, and they were very picky on their color, too, and style also. Hmm. So I don't remember what I was using. I was using a little 6-inch Guggen something or another. What is like that? What do they call that? They're dropping whatever.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. But what is that called?
I should just go grab my soft plastics and rip it all open. But so I tried some other things. Like, I like a lot of the Bass Reaper stuff, and I really have a good success with their icicle. It's a really thin worm, and the tail like flares at the end. It almost looks like a kind of looks like an icicle with like a triangle on the end. And I've had really good success with that. That was nothing. I went right back to that Guggen drop and whatever it is. And
drag and drop.
Yep. Yeah. That's it. Yep. And again, like, they were hitting that. So I don't know if it was a profile thing. I didn't have the same colors for both to experiment if it was a color thing, mm-hmm. but that's what they wanted.
Hmm. And how do you experiment with how far, how much line you put between the leader and the hook and the weight, or is that more of a standard thing for you that you go with?
I do about 8 inches. That's what's been working for me.
Okay.
So not super far off the bottom, but maybe a foot. I don't know. I hook my hook on the hook keeper. I wrap my line around the back. and then the weight sticks in my foam rod holder. So however long that winds up being, because that's the, how I store it. So it works really well.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
So 8 inches to a foot, depending on how it wraps around the reel, that's about where I'm at.
And I know when I talked to Jimmy about Jimmy and I did a show on drop shotting a while back. And one of the things that I talked to him about was that length specifically between your hook and your weight really comes into play when you're casting out. You know, if you're just dropping it on fish, then that's not a big a deal. But when you're casting out, the angle of your line really diminishes that length. So if you have 8 inches, but you're at a pretty steep angle, that's going to cut that down in half or more. So I didn't know, do you generally cast out or do you kind of drop it on?
So I'm generally casting out 40 to 50 feet. So this last lake, a lot of sunken timber and 15 foot of water. And I have active target on my kayak. So I would use that to find the timber, to know what direction it is to cast to it. While you can get your lure to show up on there, I find I spend more time looking at the screen rather than fishing then trying to find my lure, because it's still a relatively narrow cone, especially in forward mode, because it's a narrow cone and you're looking farther out rather than scout mode, which is wide. So what I really do is I just find out I'm like 50 feet away from the cover and it's kind of like at my 230-ish position. So I cast over there like 60-ish feet and drag it back into it. Gotcha. I like to stay at least 30 to 40 feet away from the cover I'm fishing. That's just preference. I probably could get closer. I know other people get closer. I like to stay as far away as I possibly can and still being able to present my lure.
Gotcha. So, and then you just drag it till you feel it and then kind of let it hang out there a little bit or work it down right next to it.
I work it real slow back to me. And then if I feel a hang up, I'll jiggle it a little bit real light and pause. And then I'll pop it to get it past that hang up. And then I'll slowly drag it back until it hits. It's like, could be a rock, could be a weed, could be one of the pieces, one of the timber over there. And then as soon as I feel like that little hang up, I'll wait, I'll jiggle it a little bit, like let that worm or get some good action, because it's hung up now. So it's kind of like a teeter and you're able to work it almost like you're vertical jigging.
Right.
And I'll pause. And then if nothing happens, I'll give it that next pop to bring it back to me. That's how I work. That's how I work the drop shot.
Gotcha. And do you prefer mostly floating worms with that? Or I know when I was messing around with it in the river, I was using like big longs, or not long, but the skinny Z-Man worms, just because I knew that they would float versus something that I felt like might, you know, tend to drop down and then I'd have to work it back up, you know.
That Guggen seems to be relatively, I wouldn't say it float, it's pretty neutral buoyant, and that Bass Reaper Icicle is real neutral buoyant as well, and I feel like they have really good action. Now I never fish them vertically. I don't vertically jig them. Gotcha. So I really don't know how either of those baits really work in a true straight up and down. Like I've never just set it next to here to like, see like, how does that bait really react? Does it start to drop? Does it say neutral buoyant? Cause that's not really how I fish it.
Gotcha. Okay. I mean, and that's one thing that I was always concerned, but maybe I don't have to worry about that as much given that I generally cast it and don't drop it right on top of it. I'm not dropping straight down. So
I work mine back super slow, always leaving some tension like on the line. And sometimes just the wind alone with some tension will work that bait. You know what I mean? Like that's how slow I'm dragging it, as slow as I can, while keeping tension on that line is what I'm trying to do. So gotcha. As that weight's crawling over whatever with that tension, you get movement just out of that bait, just from that little bit of up and down and vibration.
Okay. No, that makes a lot of sense. And I know, and how do you generally work the bigger worms with the peg weight? Just dragging that on the bottom?
Dragging it super slow.
Yep.
Giving it a pop occasionally to let, because I do your standard worm weight. I've switched to tungsten because I like the lower profile in the weeds. It sucks when you break it off, but it is what it is.
Right.
I do that. I do a bead and then I do my hook. So when you give it a little pop, you get that little click from the weight hitting the bead, which also protects your knot. But I like that little click. I feel like that click can sometimes be the difference actually.
Okay.
But I drag that pretty slow. If I'm working like timber, like what I was there, I drag that pretty slow. Last night though, I was pitching it exactly where I wanted it with accurate casts, letting it fall. And then the fish would hit by the time, like, I pulled the tension out of the line. They were hitting on the drop, and I was keeping just enough tension so when they would pull, I could set the hook. But I was letting it be very loose to let that have a natural fall.
And I know you mentioned that was in grass. Is that something that you would go to more in a super grassy environment versus, you know, something like the drop shot? I imagine drop shot's tough to fish in something like that.
I know some people that love fishing the drop shot in grass. I don't prefer it in thick grass because it's an open hook. In lower grass, it's fine. Like, I use those little tungsten, like, drop weights. So they're actually, like, I use the specific weights designed for it. And those pull through the grass pretty good. And that'd be about the only time I'd consider maybe going with a longer length of line between the weight and that to keep that bait just in the top edge of the weeds as best I could. But I wouldn't say that's one of my preferred methods for fishing grass.
Gotcha.
And honestly, the Texas rig, last night was only the second night I've thrown it, and I gained a ton of confidence throwing that 10-inch worm on a Texas rig. That was my second time ever throwing it. So I don't have enough experience working that in that thick grass yet. So we'll see what happens there, but it's going to be something I try.
No, and that's definitely something, you know, on the river, we have a lot of that celery grass that is – it's super fragile. Like, the second you touch it, it breaks, but it also, that means it breaks off on your lures a lot. So, you know, pretty much every time I'm bringing something back, I have something to clean off of it. So, it's definitely one of the tougher grasses that I've fished, just because it does break off so easily. And even stuff that normally, like, you know, they say, oh, a jackhammer come through grass. It doesn't come through celery grass because it breaks off so easy and just gets wrapped around everything. So, it's definitely been a challenge. I've actually started using weightless flukes and stuff and just kind of letting that settle down into the very top of the grass because I don't, you know, I want to do everything I can not to get in there or throw something that has, you know, no hook exposed at all. And you know, even on some of those, sometimes it'll even get caught up just on the front of the bait. Like if you throw a swim bait or something, even if you have this, one of those swim bait hooks where you can bury the hook, it'll still just get caught on the front of the swim bait and gather grass there. So it's definitely a challenging grass to fish if I, you know, as far as the different grasses that I fished in. So
that Texas rig might work pretty well for you then, to be honest, just because if you go with the tungsten weight, it's so much smaller of a profile for you to get hung up on. And then that, so crazy thing last night, that 10 inch worm got so beat up, like, I had to replace it, obviously, because you go through soft plastics. But I only had a few minutes left, and I had a 7-inch ribbon tail sitting in my cup holder from a different bait that I never rigged. So I threw that on quick, pitching back to the same spot. I couldn't believe the difference that worm made and how much more grass got hung up on it.
Interesting.
It was like night and day difference. That 10-inch worm came through the grass beautifully. Every cast with that 7-inch worm, which is a different style, still like a ribbon tail, but different manufacturer, every cast came back hung up.
Huh. So something you probably, I really, really should experiment with just because two ribbon tail worms both are come back completely different. It's got to be, you know, it's definitely worth trying some different baits. So
I would have to keep that in mind. That 10-inch worm has a super smooth body.
Mm-hmm.
I think that other ribbon tail, that ribbon tail's got like the ribs through the front. I think that was the difference.
Interesting.
I don't know for sure, but there was a noticeable difference because the first time I casted that 7-inch in there, I'm like, oh, bite. I'm like, wait, that was wheat. I'm like, what is going on here? And I cast it back. It was the same thing. I'm like, this makes no sense. There was a noticeable difference between the design of those two worms and how they came through grass.
Interesting. That's definitely something I'll have to keep in mind then because it sounds like, for sure, if there's ribbing or something like that on the worm, it definitely makes a difference. I'll have to keep that in mind.
It did in the matted, like, thick grass I was, like, that was butting up against these clear water spots and had some current cutting through it. Like, it definitely made a difference there. Like, noticeable where, like, it clicked on my second cast. Like, that noticeable where it wasn't like, why am I catching weeds? It was like, I changed worms. Like, wow.
Gotcha. Well, and then I know you mentioned the jigging worm, and I was wondering how you came about using that, because I know you said that you have an interesting story about that, too, because until you mentioned it, I had not heard of it before. So
I've always been a big jig fan. Craws, things like that on my jig. Creature baits, like the spiny craw or like some lizard type, like big flangey, like stuff like that. But normally I'd like rip them down so they were a slightly smaller profile. But I still liked a lot of like fluff coming out of it. You can say like legs, things like that. Unless I was skipping docks, then I rip all that off and I just have two tails, so it backlashes less for me.
Right.
But I don't remember what tournament it was. I had a bad night. Like my trolling motor didn't work on my kayak. I wound up having a loose wire in the hull. I broke a rod. Something else happened too. Like it was just a really bad night. I still took third. I had a terrible, miserable night fishing. I only put two fish in the boat, and I still took third because it was just a super tough bite that night. But after I broke that rod, I'm like, I have an extra reel, and I had this St. Croix rod. It's a 6'6" medium heavy fast that I just had laying around because I couldn't find a good use for it. I bought it because I'm in Wisconsin and I go grouse hunting up in St. Croix, like up by in Park Falls a lot. And that's where St. Croix is out of. So I go in their shop at least once a year, if not twice a year. And I look through all their B stock and their C stock, and I got a really good deal on this rod. And this was when I was first getting into bass fishing, like really starting to take a better look at it and really starting to try to hone my skills. And I'm like, it was cheap. I'm like, well, it's a 6'6" medium heavy. I'll find a use for it. And I actually used it for a crankbait rod for a while, which it wasn't a great crankbait rod, but it wasn't a bad rod. So I had this rod just laying here, and I'm like, and I just broke that rod and I had this reel. So I'm like, well, let's find something similar in the St. Croix line. So I was looking at the Mojo series, and they had a jig and worm rod, which previously was 6'6", and now I think it's 6'8". I'm like, what the heck is a jig and worm? So I started Googling it. I'm like, that's all it is. It's a jig with a worm. Like it's that simple. Like I'm thinking some complex like bait. Like, no, it's literally a jig with a worm on the back of it. I'm like, well, I got a rod for it. We might as well try it. So I threw on a 3/8 ounce swim jig. Normally something I would use for skipping docks. And that was my plan. I was going to go out and skip docks with it. And I put on a 7-inch Rage cutter worm. And I ripped it down just a little bit. So it was probably like 5.5 or 6, but I wanted that big tail and I wanted that chunky worm on it.
Mm-hmm.
I skipped it under the first dock and it, like I went out to pre-fish. This was the weekend. This was the Saturday after I had that really bad tournament. So I went out there. I wanted to make sure my kayak was working and everything else. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go out in the kayak. I'm going to pre-fish this lake. And I went out there with that jig and worm. And my first cast under the dock was a 17.
Wow.
I'm like, huh. I caught three more on docks, like within 10 minutes. I'm like, okay, found a dock bite. This is cool. Talked to a homeowner for a while about my kayak and my setup. And then I went and started to look, working some deep water stuff with some different baits. And then I found that creek I went into, which won last night. I found that pre-fishing. And what really sealed the deal with that jig and worm is I found an 18 3/4 on a log with that thing and it hammered it. And then I'm like, there's something to these bigger baits and these bigger, slimmer profiles. Cause it's a big profile. I mean, you got your 3/8 jig with like 7 inches of worm sticking off the back. It is a, but I've caught fish skipping docks on it now, flipping it to timber and letting that tail wag. And I've also caught fish swimming it on top of grass. So actually using a swim jig, like a swim jig, which I never used to do. I always used a swim jig just because I like the profile and I could skip it super easy. So I also have been starting to catch them like actually swimming a jig back through grass, where a lot of times I would use a vibrating jig, but I'm like, let's try a slightly more subtle profile. And that seems to be working too. So it's just a really universal bait now for me that I can work in tons of different applications.
Interesting. And it sounds like, you know, you can really vary the retrieve. You can fish it more traditionally like a regular jig, you know, and just like slowly, you know, crawl it back or work it real slow around cover. But if you're also fishing it like a swim jig, you mean moving it, I think you can definitely, you know, that's definitely two vastly different techniques that if you have the same rod in your hand and can do both, that's going to be a pretty versatile lure to use.
And with that Rage tail, like, I'm not like, there's plenty of different soft plastics out there. It's just what I had. But it's got that big fat tail on it. So when you're swimming it, it gets a ton, just a ton of motion in the water. And that same thing as well, like skipping it under docks, or like when I let it hit the ground and I kind of pop it, that tail is just so big and flapping. Like, rather than that shorter craw profile, which I really do like too. Like, I still use a craw. I don't know which one I like better, to be honest. Like, I normally will, like, lately I've been bringing two jig rods with me. One with a craw, like a smaller profile, and the jigging worm. If I'm not getting bit on the jigging worm, I'll go to the craw. And sometimes I want that smaller profile, a little more subtle. I also can skip that better. So a lot of times I can get that farther under those docks, which is where the less pressured fish are, because not a lot of anglers can skip baits. It's not like, it took me probably a good solid year and a half of actually practicing before I could do it consistently with accuracy.
I can do it with a spinning rod way better than I can do it with a casting rod. I skip wacky rigs all the time because the lake I fish has a lot of trees on the shoreline that are just at the water level. So I like to, you know, skip it up under those trees back to the shoreline, because a lot of fish hang out there. So that was something I learned on a spinning rod pretty fast, but it's definitely not the same when I try and do it with the casting rod. It's never a pretty picture, and I usually spend a lot of time picking up backlashes. So
one thing that helped me, and this probably won't help everybody else, is I loosened everything up on my reel and I stopped casting so hard.
Okay.
I started to do more of a roll cast and let the weight of the lure take it rather than forcing it. And I actually loosened up my reel, which seems counterproductive, I know, but like, that to me made a difference, where I could roll it in on that looser reel.
Gotcha. I know, I have the angle. Right. No, I have a DC that I started using for that. And I can do it a little bit with the DC, because I'm not as worried about backlashing. But on a regular casting rod, I still struggle. But I'll have to try that loosening up a little bit and see if that works at all. Definitely worth a shot. Although, like I said, if I have to do it, I pretty much go with the spinning rod at this point, just because I know I can skip with the spinning rod. But so
if you want to start practicing, figure out about how long you're going to be casting, 50, 75 feet, pull that much line off your reel, like just leave it on your reel. Don't cut it, but pull out like 75 feet-ish a line, or a hunt, like whatever you think that casting difference is, depending on, like, I'm not 75 feet away from a dock when I'm skipping. Right. I'm 30, 40 feet at most. Maybe sometimes even only 20 feet, just to get that accuracy in there. And normally you have a little bit of waves. I'm not as worried about being so close for noise. But I took about 50 feet and I wrapped a piece of electrical tape around it and then reeled on top of it. So if you backlash, you're only to the electrical tape.
Right. No, I that's actually how I first started learning to bait cast in the beginning. I watched a Gene Jensen video, and he had talked about doing that when you're first learning to throw a bait caster. So initially I used that trick just to learn how to cast a bait caster. So that's definitely a good idea. Yeah, to learn how to skip.
Cause then you're not fighting that backlash. And what's worst case scenario? Like, it's that bad. Cut off 50 feet of line, retie, put new tape on. You know what I mean? Like, when I was learning, I ran not super cheap line, but cheap enough line that I didn't care about.
Right.
And it was just new line, so it's like, it was new, but I let it sit for a little bit, so it actually wanted to cooperate. If that makes sense. Like, I threw some long casts and I pulled some stretch into it and whatnot, so it actually was like malleable, because I think brand new line is one of the worst things to cast with personally a lot of times.
No, for sure. And that's another thing. Like, I used to go practice when I was grilling. Like, anytime I'm out in the backyard grilling, I would take the bait caster out and just toss to all corners of the backyard, work on flipping and pitching, all sorts of stuff. But skipping is not something you can really practice out of the water. You know, it doesn't seem
I stood on a cooler in my front yard next to my sidewalk, and I skipped it down the sidewalk. I just said goodbye to sidewalk. That jig. And I would skip it down the sidewalk. Because if you get your angle wrong on that first skip, you're going to backlash.
Right.
So I stood
Makes sense.
So I stood on a cooler, which is about the right height of what I figured, like, my kayak would be off the water. And then I would skip down the side. I would skip down the sidewalk. And my jig was trashed. Like, like it was like the lead was all mangled and everything, but it was already an old busted. I think the hook broke off on it or something, or the weed guard fell out or something. So I didn't care about it anymore, but yeah, right. I'd just be right in my front yard, like standing out like on the cooler. And my neighbors looking at me crazy as I'm whipping a jig down a sidewalk.
I will have to try that. I didn't think that it would work very well, but as long as I definitely have a jig or two, I think I could spare. So I'll have to try that.
You'll start to see when you get it on the concrete, like when it really wants to skip, like either you're going to be too high and it's going to bounce, or you're going to be too short and it's going to either stub or like do a big hop. You'll start to see when you get that sweet spot. And that sweet spot is pretty similar to the water's sweet spot. Like it actually is.
Interesting. No, I have some time where I can't really go anywhere. So I think I know what I'm doing tomorrow after dinner.
It worked for me. It helped me a lot, just getting that like roll cast down. And then you can play around with like making your reel a little looser and see if you can't let that bait work a little more for you rather than trying to force it down there. Like let it skip on its own, pull its own weight.
That's actually something I've been working on a lot with my bait casters, is loosening up in general, just to get more casting distance and stuff like that. And I've, you know, as I've gotten better and better and don't backlash nearly as much, I've been slowly taking off the brakes and continuing to learn and get that feel to really up my casting distance and accuracy and everything. So it's definitely time for the skipping to come into that as well. So
I still backlash plenty skipping. Like you're never going to get around it.
Right.
I don't remember. I think it was the G-Man did an episode on skipping and like, one of the first words out of his mouth, like he had a backlash. He goes, "If you ain't backlash, you ain't skipping." Like right from him. Like he's probably like one of the best people that can skip in a bass boat. And his first words are like, he's picking out a bird's nest. He goes, "If you ain't getting bird nest, you ain't skipping right." Like it just happened. Cause sometimes you catch that wave just wrong and it stubs.
Right. Or
your roll is slightly off. I mean, it still happens. Now when it happens though, a lot of times I can still have that bait. Most of the time it'll still be under that pier somewhat. And I don't have much to pull out quick. And I've been bit on that just because it's got 10 extra seconds of a hesitation under there. And then I'll go to pick up the line and there's a bass on it.
That has actually happened to me too on several occasions, even with the like a wacky worm where I'll cast it and you know something will happen and I'll be letting it sit there. And that really helped me learn more patience with the wacky rig as well, about letting it sink and giving it time, because when I first started fishing it, I wasn't being super patient, and catching bass like that let me know that I do need to be patient. And that's really, for me, definitely a kind of patience and a line watching technique for sure, now that I've gotten accustomed to it. And for a while there, it was my go-to technique because I was most comfortable with it. Now I've kind of branched out a little bit to a few other things, but definitely has a place in my heart as kind of the first technique that I really had success with. So
I've got a lot of different techniques I have confidence in. When it's down to the wire and I need to catch fish, I'm going shallow with a wacky. Like that is still like my, if everything's down and out and I haven't found a bite, I'm going to docks. I'm going to structure. I'm going to tight to cover, like different reeds or like cattails, and flipping it to clear patches in there. And I'm going with a wacky. Like when it comes down to it, like if I had one lure, if I only had one lure to fish to win like $100,000, I've got confidence in plenty of baits this year, like on top of other years, but it's the wacky, hands down.
No, I agree. And that's why I used to struggle a lot then when it would be really windy, because I couldn't throw it very well. I mean, it still worked, but I definitely couldn't watch the line as well. And anytime I'd get that big bow in the line and I'm just like, oh, this sucks. I just can't fish the way I want to fish. You know, now when that happens, then I switch to like a crankbait or something that I can really move and kind of doesn't matter how windy it is because I'm pulling it tight and running it that way. But I usually will have a wacky rig tied on just in case it dies down, or like you said, I just need to get something going to get some confidence going. So,
right. See, that's one thing, like crankbaits and jerkbaits, I've had such hit or miss success. Like, I don't even have my crankbait box in my crate. Like, I don't have a, like, I have a crankbait rod. I'll fish crankbaits, like, in certain very, very specific situations. But for the most part, I don't bring it. I don't bring the crankbaits with. Like, I have such little confidence in those and jerkbaits. I mean, going fishing with a friend in spring, like, I was using a Carolina rig with a worm. He was throwing a jerkbait. We were both catching fish. There was no way I would have put on a jerkbait, though. Like, that's how little my confidence is. I was watching him catch fish with it. I still wouldn't throw it. Like, and I've tried. Like, it's not like I'm just like, oh, it doesn't work. No. Like, I just have such little confidence, and I've never gotten on that good jerkbait bite where it's like, all right, this is when it produces. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just so far. Like, it's like, that's another, like, those, like, that and crankbaits are, like, the techniques that are next on my list to try to, like, really determine the when, where, and how.
I feel like crankbaits and lipless cranks I got. Jerkbaits, definitely not. I'm in the same boat with jerkbaits. Whenever I throw it, I feel like I'm not either not throwing it where the fish are, or I'm not working it right or something. And I've had multiple people tell me, oh, you know, I'm going to take you out and we'll get you on a good jerkbait bite. But just haven't had an opportunity to do that. And so I still have zero confidence in a jerkbait as well. I think I've maybe caught one or two fish on it, you know, in the time that I've been fishing. And I caught one trolling a Mega Bass Vision 110 once. I caught a walleye that way, actually. And just actually working a jerkbait the way it's supposed to be worked, or at least the way I think it should be worked, I've only maybe caught two fish. So it's definitely not a confidence bait for me either. But crankbaiting and the lipless crank, the rattle trap, that has been my go-to in the past, you know, year on the river for sure. Because I like...
I'm a fan of the rattle trap. I'm a fan of a lipless crankbait in the springtime when you get that emergent vegetation up by me and you can rip it right over the top of that vegetation. Like, you might get hung up occasionally, but you can just work that one so well in those shallower waters, those warmer waters, and you're just starting to get that vegetation to come up. I love a lipless, a loud, heavy rattling, ripless crankbait. I mean, it's right there with like a vibrating jig, like a jackhammer or something like that. But sometimes I really like that lipless crankbait instead.
No, it's definitely, I love how much water I can cover with it. On the Susquehanna, it's very rocky. It is grassy now. The grass is starting to come up, but when the grass is still, you know, just coming out, I feel like a crankbait works great because I can just run along the bottom and just cover tons of river and, you know, pick up bass left and right. So, now that the grass is really starting to come out, I kind of put that away. Go to the lipless, something that I can kind of rip out of the grass a little more. I feel like I have a little better luck with that than a crankbait through the grass as well. But
sure. You don't have that bill hanging up and getting line wrapped around it, and then they all pile on the bill.
Right. Yep. No, for sure. Now, and then that's not to say that the lipless comes back clean very often. Usually I'm cleaning that off as well. But just ripping it through, I seem to get more hits on that ripping it through than I did on the crankbait. So.
I mean, like, I've never, like, I've used different techniques, but I've watched anglers, like, I've been a co-angler before. I've had co-anglers in my old bass boat. I've gone fishing with other buddies in kayaks that we're fishing deep water, and I'm fishing a slower, like, a drop shot, or a really big fan of the Necco rig. Like, that's one of my go-tos for deep water just a finesse presentation. I'll choose that over a net any day for me. I have way more confidence in that. But they're fishing like DT-16s and DT-20s, and they're smacking smallies. And like, I'm like, how? Like, I can't get that to work on a crankbait. Like, I don't, like, fishing open water, like, with DT-20s, like, and ticking the bottom, like, and they're getting hammered. And if I do anything other than finesse, it's like, where are all the fish?
No, and for me, for the longest time, it was about the rod. Like, I fished a lot of crankbaits initially and didn't really have any luck. And then I bought this cheap Cast King crankbait rod off a guy on Craigslist. I think it was like $90 or something like that. And as soon as I got that rod, for some reason, I don't know what it was about it, but I started catching fish. And then I got my confidence in it and didn't look back from there, man. I lost that rod earlier in the summer here on the Susquehanna, and I since upgraded to a Shimano Corrado crankbait rod that luckily I think I found one that's pretty much equivalent to that casking as far as the action and everything, because it seems to work just as good, and I'm super happy with it. I kind of was a little picky about what I wanted to replace that with, and I almost went with the same exact rod just because I had so much success with it. But
sure,
for me, crankbaits was definitely about the rod. Until I got that rod, I had zero confidence, and I don't know what it was about that rod, the way it must be the way the, you know, it just, I don't even know. It just was a confidence thing for me, for sure.
Yeah. And I picked up a glass crankbait rod rather than a carbon, which mm-hmm. that's taken a little bit to get used to, because it's got such a different feel. And I haven't spent enough time with it yet on the water. I've thrown it a couple times, like, and I'm like, man, this thing is different. Like, it's just, it almost feels spongy. I don't know how to describe it, because I'm so used to, like, and I have medium powered. I have moderate, like, but that glass, like, medium moderate rod, like, it's just so different feeling than what I'm used to. So I gotta try to spend some time and see if I can't get on a good crankbait bite to try to really figure that out and like really get that rod dialed in to see if I like it, like the glass rod for that application.
I have a similar rod. I bought a St. Croix glass cranking rod specifically for that, because I was like, oh, well, maybe if you know, I like the carbon rods, then maybe a glass rod will be even better. But I don't know, the St. Croix in general to me is stiffer than what the action says, and this rod is no different. Like, it's a moderate glass rod, and it to me fishes not like a moderate rod. It definitely is it's a little bit stiffer. So I tend to use that rod as my crank, or as my jackhammer, or my bladed jig rod, just because I don't know that I need quite the parabolic bend that I get from my regular crankbait rod. So that's generally what I use the St. Croix rod for. Even though it's listed as a crankbait rod, I tend to use it more for bladed jigs and stuff. So,
and if it's got mine's a St. Croix. Mine's also a St. Croix, and I would agree it is a little on the stiffer side, but I'm so used to glass medium heavies and stuff like that. Like, to me, it still has that weird like feel to it.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Even like it feels so much different than I have a Quantum. What were they calling those? It's one of their custom builds. They were custom building rods for their tournament anglers, and you could buy the extras. Okay. And I got one of those in a medium fast, and that feels nothing like that glass rod. Like, that thing's super sensitive. That's what I was using yesterday for that 10-inch worm on the Texas rig. And that thing is crazy sensitive, because I could pick up those ticks like with just a little bit of like tension in that line, but still letting it fall naturally. Like, I could feel it super easy. But that glass rod feels so different.
Cool. Yeah, no, it took me a while to get used to it too. And when I lost the casking rod, and I was like, oh, well, I'll just use the St. Croix glass rod for my crankbait rod. I tried it for a while. I'm like, no, I got to go find something else, because it wasn't the same. Definitely didn't have the same confidence in it. It just didn't feel the same to me. So, luckily the guys at the tackle shop closest to me were really cool and were patient with me while I, you know, search for the equivalent of that casking rod, because I really wanted to get something similar. And they showed me a lot of different rods before I kind of settled on that Shimano Corrado one. But I'm definitely happy with it. So
nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Oh man. Well, we're getting on near an hour. I think I wanted to give you a chance to let folks know where they can hear your segment, as well as any sponsors that you have, and wanted to shout out, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. So my segment's the Feather and Fur. I'm hunting focused, as you can't tell by my background. I do fish as well, and I'm a kayak fisherman, but I don't talk much specifically about hunting from kayaks. I talk about hunting in general. A lot of my shows roll into bird hunting, dog training. I have specific dog training episodes, big game hunting. So it's really just a general feel of hunting. And I keep my shows really laid back. I try to be just be like two guys around a campfire drinking whiskey, swapping stories, unless if we're really specifically diving into like how to set up good behaviors in a puppy that lead to better training opportunities. So like how to create behaviors. Like I have an episode specifically on how to create, like how to establish good puppy behaviors to aid in your training future. So like I do have those detailed driven episodes, but a lot of mine are storytelling. And that's
I think the shows of yours that I've listened to definitely have that sitting around a campfire vibe to them for sure. So,
and that's what I wanted, because that's what I enjoy. I love grouse camp. I love deer camp. I mean, we just sit around, we tell stories about pasts and it's just a good time. So that's how I really wanted my show to feel, but I still wanted that informational at times too, like to really drive into specific topics. So I think it's been a good balance.
No, I think so too. I think you're doing a great job, and it's definitely something that you're really not going to find many other places for sure. So
I don't think so. I think it's kind of unique. I like it. That my next episode actually airs this coming Saturday. So it's cool. Bi-weekly.
Nice. And how about sponsors? Who do you want to shout out?
We'll start with New Canoe. I'm thankful for letting me join on one of their dealer teams. I'm on the Rocktown Adventures fishing team. So Rocktown Adventures is my local kayak shop out of Rockford, Illinois, and thankful that they brought me on. Who else do we got? We've got Hardwater Freaks. If you're interested, like Max is a great guy, and we got linked up because he does so much for veterans and I do stuff for veterans, and he's not a sponsor. Like I don't get anything from Hardwater Freaks. So he's not a sponsor, but I have his logo on my jersey because we really have the same mission, and that's to get veterans and first responders, kids, women, like into the outdoors to like make sure like our outdoor traditions survive. And that goes for duck hunting and fishing, ice fishing. So he's not a sponsor, but he deserves a huge shout out because we really have the same mission, and he let me put a logo on my jersey. So, and as far as I know, I'm the only logo on any jersey out there from Hardwater Freaks. So
that's awesome.
that is great. I love it. Swamp Buck Camel, great camel company. And then they have an entire fishing line, which they're dropping at at July here. They're dropping a whole bunch of different shirts and different weights and things like that. That's really the shirt I've been wearing all year. It's got a built-in buff and a built-in hood, which is really nice because I don't have to remember the buff or any of that. So got a huge thank you to Swamp Buck Cabell. And then, like I said, Wisconsin Hero Outdoors. I'm the South Central Project Coordinator, so shout out to them also. And then Paddle and Fin.
Yeah. I can't remember them. You know, they definitely gave us both a great opportunity, and I'm thrilled to be a part of that as well. So can't thank Brian enough for giving me a shot, and you know, definitely look to continue you know, being part of this family, because it's a pretty special group we got. I think
it's been good times. Dale Hollow was fun.
Oh yeah, heck yeah, it was. So
I'm excited for next year already.
Yeah, no, for sure. I am looking forward to it. I'd love to make ICAST too one of these years. I just gotta save up some vacation, because doing the camp thing definitely zaps my vacation in half pretty much every year, but definitely something I don't know that I would trade for much else, because that's another special experience that is near and dear to my heart for sure. But I can totally echo your support of the veterans. I'm a big supporter of my local Heroes on the Water chapter. We have an event coming up this Saturday. Sadly, I'm going to miss because of my stupid COVID stuff, but we still got another 3 or 4 events left this year. So I'm definitely looking forward to helping out with that, and including our 2 biggest events. I'm excited for those, and just super happy to support veterans and, you know, first responders and in that aspect. So thanks for all you do for veterans as well. And I think that's a very noble cause. So.
I agree. I didn't serve myself, so it's my way of giving back to those who did. And that's how I look at it. And it's a big thing for me. So
that's exactly how I was too. A lot of times at our events, people ask me, oh, did you serve? And I'm like, no, my dad was a military contractor. So I kind of grew up around the military my whole younger life, but never served. I have a lot of family that served, and I was the same way. I just want to give back and say thanks to those people who do, do what they do so that I can have the freedoms that I enjoy. So
exactly my thought.
All right, man. Well, Brad, thanks again so much for coming on and letting us know. I super hope I didn't jinx you. And I wish you the best of luck. Keep crushing it out there. I hope you can run away with the Angler of the Year and, you know, totally, you know, continue to crush the rest of this season. And I wish you the best of luck with the Feather and Fur segment as well. And definitely look forward to hearing more of that as well. So
appreciate you having me on.
All right, man. Well, guys, thanks for tuning in for another episode of Bass Fishing for Noobs here on the Paddle and Fin Podcast, where we bring you the techniques, the tricks, and the tips to help you rip more lips. You guys have a good night.
Thanks for tuning in to another killer episode here on Paddle and Fin. Be sure to drop a 5-star rating, a thumbs up, or smash that subscribe button on any platform you're listening in on. Be sure to check us out on Waypoint TV, waypointtv.com. Make sure you sign up for the Fantasy Kayak Fishing League at paddleandfin.com/fantasy. You could support this show through Patreon, patreon.com/paddleandfin. Don't forget to check out the website, paddleandfin.com. Catch us on YouTube. If you got a question, comment, or want to see a future guest on the show, be sure to email us at paddleandfin@gmail.com. Shout out to our show supporters, Yak Gadget. You can check out all the fine kayak accessories at yakgadget.com. Pelican Professional. For all your cases, coolers, and lighting needs, go to pelican.com. Rocktown Adventures. Your Midwest premier paddle sports destination, go to rocktownadventures.com. Eastport Marina, the beautiful destination on Dale Hollow Lake. If you're looking for lodging, kayaks, kayak accessories, or anything fishing related on the beautiful Dale Hollow Lake, go to eastport.info. And Jigmasters Jigs, when in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com and fill your tackle boxes today.